Good evening. You are listening to Compulsory Diversity News, a public service of White Guilt Incorporated. White Guilt Incorporated, making white people feel bad about being white since 1958. CDN is made possible by a grant from the Goigel Cohen Fund. The Goigel Cohen Fund, making white people feel bad about being white since 33 CE. The mission of CDN is to offer Voice of Reason broadcast network listeners a thoughtful, impartial, and inoffensive counterpoint to what they naively refer to as free speech. Remember, diversity is strength, therefore similarity is weakness. Everyone is equal, therefore everyone is similar. And since everyone is similar, everyone is weak. That is why you need Compulsory Diversity News. Wars and rumors of war. Rumors and wars of rumors. Obamas and rumors of Obamas. Why is the internet so full of blithering crackpots and millennial death worship? What have we learned now that Bush II's replacement has been scheduled? Does anyone remember when all the internet was abuzz with rumors of an imminent war with Iran? That Bush had to launch his war before he left office. Well, that worked out, didn't it? Tehran has been in our hands for months. Bush has sent the Blackwater mercenaries into every major American city to ensure his continued elective supremacy. Oh, that's right. A lie is still a lie, even when it's called a rumor. BS is still BS, regardless of the plausibility of it. Then again, however plausible was any of it to begin with? What of the October surprise that would ensure McCain's presidency? Was it Obama's alleged homosexual limousine shenanigans? Was it the never-ending birth certificate controversy? Was it Michelle Obama's anti-white thesis? What was it? All we know for sure is that McCain will be the next president of the United States, thanks to the October surprise. Oh, that's right, that was a BS rumor, too. Yet one wonders how much time was collectively spent assimilating and regurgitating this nonsense. Remember the complete economic collapse predicted by the end of September? The widespread looting, rape, arson, and breaking of porcelain collector plates that was to cripple the nation during the month of October? The magic oh-so-wallet-friendly Amero coins that would replace greenbacks immediately following? Has the date for this prediction been revised again? Shall it be after this Christmas season, but before next Halloween? Shall we pen in our violent deaths for next summer, or early spring? Is there any space left in the appointment book for a space reptiloid invasion? Sometime around Easter? They do so hate to launch summer invasions, which tend to interfere with space reptiloid vacation plans. No, we remember none of this. Fine. Let us move on now to other internet rumors currently making the rounds, the most prevalent of which involve predictions of what an Obama presidency means to you, gentle listeners. First, there is the rumor that as a result of an Obama presidency, there will be a massive tax increase, especially for the middle and upper classes. Tax increases meant to form the proverbial wad that Obama will blow on the Great Society Part the Second. There is such a glaring absurdity to such a rumor that it is hard to know where to begin. Imagine the idea, tax increases on the middle class. This is, of course, nonsense, for it is predicated on the delusion that there will be a middle class during an Obama presidency. No, dear listeners, the middle class is mere vapor now. Equality of middle and lower shall be achieved. The presence of dear Uncle Biden ensures the elite shall remain untouched. If the world must have its Brangelina types, telling middle America to spread the wealth and not be so wasteful, while those same types flit off to Africa in private jets to adopt another photo op. The elite are our moral compass. Without them, we may drift into the filthy morass of self-determination and social responsibility. Another rumor regarding the Obama presidency is that blacks shall be emboldened, shall become insufferable, that they will riot over the most insignificant slight and be completely intolerable as neighbors or co-workers, that blacks will clamor for ever more handouts and treat law enforcement with disdain, even when said blacks are themselves breaking the law. Now, may I ask you a question? What country have you been living in for your entire life? Are you trying to make your Jewish media overlords angry? You won't like them when they're angry. As their number one Shabbos goy, I feel nothing but contempt for you for having to remind you ingrates that your kosher overlords have spent the last 6 decades making the blacks as insufferable as possible. We are shocked and saddened that you would think there is still some way it could get worse. What more do you want from us? We toil night and day producing the most vile and offensive Negro entertainment imaginable to keep the apes in a constant state of agitation and to drive your children into the arms of gorillas. And this is how you repay us? By questioning the success of our handiwork? You think you need Obama to make blacks intolerable to live around? Where the hell have you been since the civil rights movement? You are really dumber than we thought. The final and most laughable rumor floating regarding an Obama presidency has been with the nation for almost the past year. It may be credited with the election results we have today. The rumor we are referring to is that Obama will deliver hope and change. Hope and change. Hope and change. Now, this, of course, greatly depends on your definitions of both hope and change. And the need to define such terminology might have been your first hint that voting for a candidate on the basis of inspiring abstractions was not a good idea. For example, if you define change as America now has its first black president, you need also to define black, since Obama is only half black. And this brings up the curious irony that in voting for Obama because he would be America's first black president, and would therefore finally defeat America's racist past, such voters have actually reinforced the overtly racist one-drop rule, that a person with even a drop of Negro blood is considered black. Why not consider more accurately that Obama's election is proof that the mulatto house slaves are finally being recognized as masses' legitimate heirs? When a pure-blooded African is elected, then you may pat yourselves on your double-thinking racist backs for believing that by voting on the basis of race you are in fact not being racist. And as for hope, well, what is it you're hoping for? Hoping for an end to war? Obama wants to increase the American presence in Afghanistan. Hoping for a repeal of the draconian legal system put in place by the Patriot Act. None other than Patriot Act enthusiast Hillary Clinton pointed out that Obama voted for the reauthorization of the Patriot Act after he decried it as a threat to civil liberties. Or how about hoping for a more just society? Well, do you mean wealth redistribution? Such an absurdity relies on the fallacy that any wealth will be generated during an Obama presidency. Now, there are those of you who may be confused at this point. Compulsory diversity news, you ask. Don't you support America's first black president? This man isn't J.J. Jimmy Walker, kiddies. This is a Harvard-educated mulatto who has been fast-tracked to the presidency by a Democratic Party desperate for a decisive campaign victory. The same Democratic Party who has disowned the only appropriate candidate for the presidency in 2008, Joe Lieberman. How dare you, American idiots, vote for a black man as president before a Jew! Oh, when the New World Order seizes absolute control, do you have any idea how many textbooks will have to be destroyed, with new copies issued to blot out this disgrace? Do you have any idea how bad it will look that a Jewish man or woman, who will inevitably be the next president, has to live in a house that a black man once lived in? Jews don't live in homes that blacks have occupied! The whole White House will have to be burned down and rebuilt from scratch before a President Lieberman, or a President Feingold, or a President Frank, or a President Feinstein, or a President Boxer. You get the picture. Do we seem a bit peeved by this outcome? I would say just a bit! But never fear, for 5 decades hence there will exist a completely unsubstantiated rumor, one that will have the kosher thought police on your butt in less than 6 seconds. Have you heard the rumor that a black man was president of the United States before a Jew was? No, we will have never heard it, and those who will have heard it will cease to exist. A stand-up comedian, Andrew Weist Gay, has made quite a name for himself among the diversity-rich community of Portland, Oregon. On any given night he may be found on the streets of his hometown, mingling with the homies, lingering with the homos, and delivering meals on wheels for people too fat to get out of their homes. He's not just a comic, he's a Renaissance man, expanding the boundaries of diversity with an artist's eye for detail and a megalomaniac's desire for fresh conquered territory. Due to certain restrictions on broadcast obscenities on this network, we are unable to air an interview with Andrew Weist Gay, the Pacific Northwest's unanimously anointed premier diversity comic slash pope. It seems he is unable to speak for longer than 3 seconds without uttering an expletive. However, we do not want to dare leave you without a sense of the diversity-affirming wholesome message behind Andrew's one-man diversity crusade. Therefore, we sent CDN's own Tad Lumpy Engelbert to take notes at an avant-garde little bistro where Andrew was performing. Unfortunately, after Tad's run-in with the trans man bouncers in the alley behind the bistro, he is unable to audibly deliver his report. We wish him well and remind him how swiftly he recovered the last time his jaw had to be wired shut after he resisted performing oral sex on a 300-pound trans man. I have Tad's notes right here. He does excellent shorthand. Perhaps he should have offered that as a compromise to the trans man. Anywho, it seems that Tad has written down a list of Weist Gay's best jokes, properly sanitizing the content for his report. Well, this should be fun. Let's go through the list. So this squint-eyed Mexican banger comes up to me at Manny the Tranny's party last Xmas and makes a sloppy pass at me. I told him I ain't no homo for tining Mexican pricks. So he grabs his crotch and screams at me, "My huevos are huge and hard as rocks." I told him, "That's 'cause you have testicular cancer." So come to find out he died last week. They took his huevos off, but it didn't save him. Oh, wow. Oh, my. Terry, can you check your online sources about this guy? The diversity comic, you say? I was expecting something different. Jokes about having intercourse with repressed Republican housewives, that sort of thing. You say your sources do check out? This joke is on his blog. Hollywood loves him, too. All right, let's continue. Maybe I misinterpreted something. Moving on to the next joke. "Hey, how can you tell a white broad is banging a black guy? 'Cause she's got AIDS now." Ms. Goigle, this might not be what you think it is. I know. I can hear you. I'm just saying, not everything that has diversity in the title can be trusted to be on our side. Ironic? No, what you're describing is sarcasm. No, that's a pun. Yeah, listen, no, that's not funny. Just stop it now. I don't have time to listen to you all cackle over Robin Williams. That guy looks like he's got toupees glued to his forearms, and you think he's hysterical. He was a hack before he got started. He's got the rainbow suspenders prop comic and coked up dumbass routine down pat. But no! He's stupid! No, there's nothing to get! This is pointless! Fine, I will then. Continuing with the list. Why do homos have butt sex all the time? They're trying to scare the hamsters out. Oh, stop it! Stop laughing up there! This is a serious program! Don't you get what he's doing? We are the voice of diversity, the vanguard of political correctness, the future of a browned America! This man is a fraud! Has it ever occurred to you that diversity is his punchline? Are you so stupid? He's making fun of you and you're laughing at it! Terry! Stop it! Stop it! Be serious for a minute. No, I don't know if Richard Gere is a person of same-sex orientation. Yes, I heard he put a hamster in his butt. I don't know, maybe he didn't have a cage for it. No, now stop laughing, I will not be drug into this. Terry, who did you say the Hollywood people are who love this guy? It's on the prompter. Andrew Weist Gay is a personal friend of Michael Richards, you frickin' moron. morons! Delete this segment. I'm calling in the Israeli Truth Squad to get control back over this studio. End transmission! Dear America, you've really done it this time, haven't you? Here, don't let your hair fall into the porcelain god like that. Let me hold it back for you. That's better. Continue your retching, my dear. You've always had a bit of a wild side, but this... Look at yourself. Oh, America, the nature of your transformation has been as astonishing as it has been rapid. Just 8 years ago, you were a well-to-do high school cheerleader, out to her senior prom. You, a little rich girl, an uptown girl, living in her white bread world. Who would be your beau? Two suitors came a-courtin'. Would you go to the prom with George? Or with Al? Everyone guessed it would be Al, president of the Save the Earth Club and class valedictorian, but let's face it, Al was a computer nerd, always talking about technology like he had invented the internet or something. Al had a tendency to put on weight, too. He was a really sloppy kisser. Remember his YouTube video with Tipper? Now, George was a bad boy, not the brightest boy, but a bad boy. Always throwing his daddy's cash around and living it up. He was a hard drinker, too, at one time. He had a reputation. He even went with a girl who had run some guy over. You know, your mom even liked George better than Al. George was a born-again Christian. He had renounced the fast life, but kept the James Dean charm. Or was that Jimmy Dean charm? It makes no difference. George was your mystery date. You had opened the door against all expectations. Yes, so unexpected had been your choice that the prom committee had to be brought back in when the popular vote chose Al as king of the prom and you as its queen. At the last minute, the prom committee set aside the vote and chose George instead, just as you had done. So George and America were king and queen, and you made such a lovely couple. Some people objected and asked for a recount, but Chad, the guy in charge of the recount, kept coming up with a different number. Last time we get a special ed kid to count the vote, the others said. Al just slinked off to the buffet table and helped himself. Next summer you saw him chubbier than ever, sporting a beard. What a loser, you thought. So you and George were a steady thing, just in time for college, and what a great choice you had made. Remember why? Just a year later, and you were driving along smoothly, cell phone in one hand, iPod in the other, when that crazy turbaned Muslim taxicab driver slammed into your SUV. It had been some insane act of road rage. Remember the smoke, the flames? The taxi driver had gotten away, but 19 of his best friends were all lying dead along the side of the road. So many Muslims in one taxi, you marveled. Your SUV was totaled. It burned and sort of crumpled in a way that left some fire inspectors puzzled. What puzzled them even more was how Mr. Silverstein's compact car, which wasn't hit, but was nearby during the accident, had also sort of, shall we say, crumpled. But it got weirder. You vaguely remember that there was some moving van full of young Jewish frat boys dancing and laughing on the side of the road while you were bloodied and dazed. But you were too much in shock by the whole thing to take any of this into account. George had rushed to the scene with his friend Rudy. George had taken you into his arms, told you it was all gonna be all right. The crazy taxi driver was gone. He'd probably already hopped on a boat out of the country, back to Pakistan, or Afghanistan, or Arabistan, or whatever place that Tal had called home, George had said. But George promised to find him. George assured you he would hunt down the filthy evildoer that had nearly got you killed. You knew only one thing, America. You felt safe in George's arms. Life wasn't so easy after that. George instituted some tough rules on you. When you could drive, where you could drive, at what hour you could drive. He even would make you take your shoes off before you got in the car so he could inspect them. You couldn't bring more than 1 ounce of any fluid with you in the car, lest your bladder become full and you had to make an unexpected pit stop at some foreigner-owned gas station. George wanted to know where you were all the time. He even got the feeling he was listening in on your phone conversations and reading your emails. When you confronted him about it, he would just smile and make his trademark choking giggle. He would ask, You feel safer, though, don't you, America? And he was right. He may have been a control freak, but even your cuckoo liberal feminist college friend seemed to trust the guy. And whenever you had your reservations, you thought it must be your fault. After all, everyone thought George knew what was best. A couple years later, and George went off to war in the Middle East. He wasn't a front-line guy, he said. He was more of a decider, behind the scenes, making the world safe from evildoers like that guy who had hit you. And when you had asked George, "Did you ever find that guy who tried to kill me?" George would look off into the distance, tight-lipped, and then mouth in a snarling voice, "It's not important. I don't really care where he is. I don't think about it. But, baby, any time I see a towel-head Muslim guy, I beat him up for you, 'cause I remember. That's how much I love you, America," he would say. While George was off at war, you were left alone a lot. Your finances were strained without him. You even had to take a dead-end job to help out with tuition. The lifestyle you were accustomed to was slipping away. Every day your bank account got smaller and your debts got bigger. But George would call the credit companies for you and work out deals to extend your line of credit and reduce your payments. His buddy Alan was a financial whiz, and they always took care of you in that sense. On one of his trips back from the war, George had proposed. In fact, he found out that some hook-nosed Frankenstein-looking guy named Johnny C. had been hanging around trying to pick you up, and George didn't want to lose you. Johnny C. was boring anyway, always talking about boats and reporting for duty. Some of his old buddies even said John barely knew how to steer a boat, but none of it really mattered. You were with George still. There was a war on, America, he had reminded you. How can you abandon your sweetheart who was off at war? That would be cutting and running. So you slapped a magnetic yellow ribbon to your Ford Focus and went off to waitress at Chili's. You were shocked when George asked you to co-sign a mortgage with him. Somewhere in the back of your mind you knew that a struggling, engaged young couple should probably not go in on a house together. But George was so excited. He told you Alan had said home prices couldn't go anywhere but up. Give it another couple of years and you could flip the house and use the profit to go to medical school. But it seemed your degree was always just out of reach. Medical school was getting to be more of an improbability for you, America. The Indian couple Chandi and Hari, who had moved in just down the street from your house, they would tell you how easy it had been for them to get medical degrees in India, and then jobs in high-paying health professions in the U.S. Why couldn't you do it, you wondered? Then there was the slow decline, America. George was back from the war, but living out of town, you barely saw one another. A friend told you he saw George giving a back rub to that German girl, Angela. Angela shrugged it off, but it made you wonder. Meanwhile, the market had seized up while your mortgage was going up. George told you to sell the house now, get out, and get whatever you could. But George, you told me home prices couldn't go anywhere but up. Well, that was before, George would say. That was what Alan told me, but Ben says people are defaulting on their mortgages all over the place. School was out of the question for you now. But you had gotten yourself a job in the medical field, though, as a receptionist at Chandi and Hari's family practice. The last message you got on your cell phone was from George. America, he said, we've grown apart. You tried to call him back, but your account had been suspended. You slipped the useless phone back in your tattered purse and sobbed. No one was calling. There was no one to call, you thought. You were miserable for a while. All the news was bad. You weren't the only one in trouble, though. At least you could take some comfort in the fact that a lot of other people were in the same state as you were. George had been very busy. But this wasn't the end for you, America. You had to find someone new. You had to carry on. So you hit the scene again. Over the past year, you've seen a lot of action, looking for Mr. Right, as they say. Someone who could help you get your life together, fix your finances, help you finish your education. Someone who could actually find that Muslim guy who hit your car 7 years ago and make him at least pay your deductible. There were a lot of George types out there looking to win you over, but they would all say the same thing. I'm not like George. They all knew about your bad history with that deadbeat. Rudy had tried to pick you up, but you weren't interested. There was that Mormon guy, Mitt, but Mormons kind of creep you out. Like he might want to bring home another wife one day and say, America, meet Asia. She's my mail-order bride. There was that born-again guy, Mike. But why does it always come down to religion with these George types, you thought? The only other choice was that weird guy, Ron, who everyone laughed at. You might have been interested, but you heard he was a closet racist. There were Al-type guys, too, and even an Al-type gal. Let's be frank here, America, you considered being a lesbian. You flirted with Sappho for a long time, and everyone thought you were going that way. Hillary was her name. She was a hard-talking, two-fisted, pants-wearing, get-her-done type, with her own bad history with men. But, in the end, you wanted there to be something to look at when the pants came off. So who else was there? Johnny E. looked like a 12-year-old boy, and he was a cheater. Billy R. was too fat and was always trying to play up that he was half-Mexican or something. Chris looked like he had dyed his eyebrows one color and then run out, so he dyed his hair another color. Dennis was even creepier than that weirdo Ron. What was it with short guys with jug ears trying to pick you up? Honestly, it looked like you were going to have to settle for a George type again. You had met another John. He had hit on you before, when you were with George. This John was older. A lot older. I mean a lot older. But maybe that's what you needed. Stability. In truth, you had given up all hope. It was too late for a change. What you needed, America, was one more night on the town, one last dance before settling down with Grandpa Can't Move His Neck. That was when you met him. It was at a smoke-filled rave called UT's Cabin. You thought you were the oldest girl there, and certainly you felt like the most straight-laced. Even Hillary never would have come to a place like that with you. Young couples, straight and bent, were going through the motions of sex, gyrating to authoritarian techno music and slipping pills into one another's mouths using only their tongues. He was just a pair of eyes floating on the darkened dance floor. Those floating eyes seemed disembodied from his dark, gangly frame. A cigarette was stuck to one of his tar-like lips. A black James Dean, you thought. Or was it a black Jimmy Dean? It didn't matter, as long as it wasn't a black Howard Dean. You could barely hear him over the music and the roaring crowd. America, he said, have I got a message for you? One saliva swap later, and you were flying. Everything was forgotten. You had only the moment, and this guy, who said his name was Obama. Hey, wait a minute. Wasn't that the name George gave to the guy who slammed into your car 7 years ago? Was this the same guy? Couldn't be. But it added to your sense of naughtiness. You had never flirted this much with a black guy before. It didn't matter that he looked like an overgrown Webster. Remember that show, Webster? Here you were, dancing at midnight with grown-up Webster while John Insane slept soundly at home. John always went to bed at 7 p.m. and got up the next morning at 8 a.m., just in time for his 9 a.m. nap. He wouldn't have any idea what you were up to. In fact, he never did. So out of your mind were you that you took Obama home with you that night? John was lying log-like, immobile, muttering a steady stream of Vietnamese, punctuated by screams of, "No more rice and fish! Stop torturing me with rice and fish!" Your half of John's bed was just enough for you and Obama. There was no need for preliminaries at that point. You were ready to go. The long, dry spell was over in just 15 seconds, leaving you nestled between a savagely deranged albino John, nightly reliving his Vietnam travails, and a snoozing half-breed closet Muslim, who had just finished with you in less time than it took to cook a Pop-Tart. "Change has come!" he screamed, at the height of your 15 seconds of passion, and you were left alone again, sticky and disappointed. So you had gotten back at George through his proxy John by hooking up with someone whose name was just one letter different from the guy who had nearly killed you 7 years earlier. Oh, America, my dear girl, whatever are we to do with you? Are you done now? Shall I press the handle for you, flush last night's revelry down the toilet? Let me start the shower. You know, when John wakes up and finds Obama in his bed after having done it with his girlfriend, there might be some unpleasantness. Is this really what you wanted? But that's just it, isn't it? You don't know what you want. Don't think it crass when I say this, America, but you're one messed up little slut, aren't you? Ah, if you could just get your mind together and come along with me. Here, I have two pills in my hand, a red pill and a blue pill. One is a hangover remedy, the other is RU486. You can refuse both, take one or the other, or take both. What will you decide? We may have to wait 4 years to find out. Then again, it may only be 9 months, America. That's all the time we have tonight for Compulsory Diversity News. From all of us here at Compulsory Diversity News, we wish you a good night and a darker tomorrow.